Welcome to NextUS 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of NextUS 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all-female African American battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. I'm pleased to welcome to episode 19 the descendant of Evelina Rachel Griffin, who served in the 6888.
My guest tonight is Betty J. Moon, daughter of Evelina Rachel Griffin. Welcome, Betty.
Hello.
All right, I'd like to start with a few interesting facts. First, your mother, Evelina, was so small in stature at 5'2", 96 pounds, the people teased her that she looked malnourished. She saw a sign that read, free physical exam, and after taking that, she received a welcome to the Army. So that must have been kind of like at 5'2", she probably said, yes, you all say that I'm short and I'm look malnourished, but look at me, I got into the Army. Was that her reaction?
She was a little shocked.
Okay.
She was shocked, but she followed through.
So the second interesting fact is your mom was an avid pinochle player and traveler.
Uh-huh. And she also belonged to a tennis club as well.
Okay. All right. Was she good at it?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I remember her playing tennis, but I was very, very young.
Okay. Yeah, I played at tennis and played at racquetball, but I've never been accused of being good at either one. So so let's talk about Evelina. And she was born in Wilmington, Delaware in 1917. How old was she when she enlisted?
26.
Okay. And what was she doing at the time of enlistment?
I don't think she had like a permanent job. I remember she said she babysat a lot of people's kids. She cooked for different families. She tried to cook because she never really was taught how to cook. And housework. That's it.
How did her parents react when she said that she was going to enlist?
Oh, well, my grandfather, her father, was an intellect. And he thought it was not really a good idea to go in the service during wartime, but he thought educational wise it would be good for her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did she have any brothers? Because a lot of times.
Yeah, one brother and one sister.
Now, was a brother in the Army in service?
No.
Okay.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, a lot of times families say, well, you know, I've already got my sons over there, but I don't know where my daughter's going also.
They were older. At the time my mother went into service, my aunt was 29 and my uncle was 32.
Oh, that never stops parents from having an opinion. as we know.
Yes.
So it was a very courageous thing for a young African-American woman to enlist in the Army in the 1940s. What do you think made her special?
Only from what I knew of her, she was a go-getter. You know, she definitely, if it was something she wanted, she went after it and didn't stop until she succeeded at getting it. I guess being in the military allowed her to see the country. And of course, eventually, you know, going overseas. I don't think she planned on doing that, but she did. So I think it was just she saw it as an opportunity to advance, to do more than what she was doing.
Right. I'm interested in any stories that she shared with you about her time in the service, any adventures, any painful, scary, or funny memories?
The only thing I can really remember her saying was when she was in Texas, she drove. That was her job, was to drive all of her commanding officers all around the country because she did not like to fly. So I remember her saying when she was in Texas, of course she had to drive, and I believe they were in San Antonio, And she said to drive from San Antonio to the end of Texas, it was like so long. It took days. And she said they had a little song that said, "The sun has rise, the sun has set, and here we are in Texas yet."
So did she talk about things that she did when she was in Europe? How she felt she was treated? How any stories from her time in New York?
She felt as though being African American, they were treated secondhandly. Of course, the white enlistees were treated much better, even when, like I said, she drove and when she went to different hotels to spend the night, they had to go in the back door where the white people went right in the front door. They had to sleep in separate barracks. They weren't together. They were segregated. And she felt that was a little injustice, considering she had already gone overseas, and she felt a little racial discrimination there. Well,
Had
of course it was.
she not experienced that in the States?
She never mentioned it. She never mentioned any discrimination in the States. I know it was because segregation didn't come around until after I was already in elementary school. So I don't know. Desegregation.
And maybe it was just she expected over there it would be different, and when it wasn't different, that was. That got her attention. So I can't, it's hard to say, you know. I'd like to hear more about what she did when she completed her military service. Did she pursue education? What kind of career, community activism?
She did go to college. She went to business college when she completed her military time.
And
She
so
got
that. That's the Pioneer Institute of Business in Philadelphia. Is that
yes.
okay?
And then she started working for the state of Delaware in their licensing department, licensing and inspection department. And what she did there, I don't know, because that was before my time. The only
Okay.
thing I remember was then she was employed at the VA hospital. And that she did wholehearted. She put everything into the hospital. I personally did not know of any racial discrimination when I was young, because my mother had all types of people that were she employed, all races, all nationalities, and they all treated her with the utmost respect. My mother was a workaholic, so sometimes I would go to work with her. She was a entertainer. She loved to have company, so sometimes her employees would come to our house. And it was like I said, it was people from all races and all nationalities. And I didn't know that there was desegregate there was segregation in the country. Because there were white people around us, Italians around us, Jewish people, all types of people, and they all treated me well. So I, as a matter of fact, the one man used to come to our house. He was the baker, and he used to bring us pastries every single Saturday. And I think he was Jewish. Yeah, I think he was a Jewish man. But yeah, every Saturday he came to our house with fresh pastries. There was one lady that was Italian. She taught my mother how to make spaghetti sauce. Like I said, there was that she employed a whole bunch of people in her department, and they were all very respectful, very, very nice. So when they started segregating the schools, I think I was in fifth grade. Yeah, because in my 6 year was when I went to a school with white kids, and I was so shocked because I never knew there was, racial segregation. I wasn't taught that way. I was always taught you treat people the way they treat you, regardless.
But
So,
you grew up until sixth grade, you were in all black schools though, weren't you?
yes.
So that
But it was in my neighborhood. I went to school with the
right.
kids in the neighborhood.
Okay. Well, okay. No. And as kids, we don't think about it. It's like, well, We don't think about the fact that, oh, we actually live in a segregated neighborhood because we can't live in other neighborhoods. That's just, as a child, it's like, that's the neighborhood. You know, your friends are there. You go to school with them. You go to church with them.
Right, exactly.
Was your mother able to take advantage of the GI Bill when she came back? Do you know?
No, I'm not sure. I don't think so. No.
Okay, because some people, it would, some people would, well, some people, many people use that to go to college,
Okay.
to pay for college, and then some people use it to buy homes.
Okay. Well, as far as our home is concerned, her father built the house that I'm in right now.
Okay.
He built from scratch. And I know that my mother, and it took him several years to build the house. And I remember my mother working to pay for every brick, you know, every piece of wood, everything. So, he built the house and she bought the materials.
Right. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if she'd use the GI Bill for some of that. But I'm not sure there's any way. Well, actually, no. If you get a hold of her service records, I think it'll tell you. You can get them from the National Archives. But I can tell you about that later if you're interested.
Okay.
Do you recall any lessons that she learned through her service that she passed on to the family? Like any values or traditions that she passed on as a consequence of being in 6888?
No, not really. No lessons from the military. The only thing I can recall her saying to me ever, all the time, as a matter of fact, was that her mother died when she was only 16, the youngest sibling. And she told me she didn't know how to do anything from housework to cooking, nothing. She was always sheltered. So she told me she did not want that to happen to me. So at a very early age, very early, she taught me how to do housework, how to wash, how to iron, how to clean the house, you know, everything. And I remember, I think I got my first checking account. Didn't even have anything to write checks for. I was about 12. About 12 years old, I had a checking and a savings account. And she always said, you know, you need to be very, very independent and rely on one person and one person only, and let that one person be yourself.
Okay. Yeah. So let's segue and talk about you and the rest of your family. You attended the University of Delaware and then you had a 32-year career in the U.S. Postal Service. Tell me about your educational and career background.
I did not want to go to college, first of all. High school was enough for me. I wanted to work. I always wanted to work and not have my mother provide me with clothes, you know, with things that she provided me with. I wanted to provide them for myself. So she kept saying, no, go to college, go to college, go to college. So in my sophomore year, I got sick. I developed acute rheumatic fever. I was
So
hospitalized.
this is your sophomore year at University of Delaware.
Yep.
Okay.
I was hospitalized for a whole month. I was supposed to be at bed rest for 6 months after I came home from the hospital. And about 3 months later, I decided, let me go look for a job. And that's what I did. So I started working for an engineering firm, and accounting was my major in college. So I started right away in their accounting department, payroll, and I did that for 14 years. Way too long, way too long. But I did it for 14 years, and then finally, I had a friend that was employed with the Postal Service, and it was actually my girlfriend's husband, and he kept trying to get me to come into the post office, and I kept saying no. And then finally, I one day I said, okay, I'm gonna take the test. Took the test, passed, and history. I joined the Postal Service.
So I understand you're also a
Oh yeah.
travel consultant.
I still do that part time. Yes. Trying to retire, but people still call me.
Well, it's nice to have something that where you have a lot of flexibility as to what you do. So
Right, that's true.
generate income and still have flexibility. That's a,
That
that's
is true.
that's a, that's a, the true blessing of retirement where you can do those two things. So
Yep.
now understand that the pride and joy, you're the a mom of three sons, the grandmother of eight, and the great grandmother of two.
Yes.
Any favorite stories you'd like to share?
Oh my, I could. Let me see. My youngest great granddaughter is a stand-up comedian at the age of five. Two of my grand, all of them are very, very intelligent. My one granddaughter has made distinguished honor. She's in the 10th grade, 11th grade. She has made distinguished honor for 2 straight years now in high school. The other granddaughter goes to private school. She's exceedingly doing well. And then my great granddaughter, now this is an interesting story. You know how they give those state tests that the kids have to all take?
Right,
I guess to see how they place or whatever. There was 26 tests she had to take. She was the only one in her school that excelled, got 100 on all 26 tests.
wow,
She's very intelligent. And she's 8 years old, very, very bright.
that's impressive. That's impressive. Now I got to meet three of the sons recently. What the what
Yep, you did. You met my three.
and what kind of work do they do?
One is the oldest one is an orthopedic nurse.
Okay.
Works in surgery, First Aid Surgery Center. He also has his own business. He has a cleaning business. So the second son works for the first son in the cleaning business. And then my third son is a workaholic. He has four jobs. He's
Wow.
a firefighter
Okay.
by trade. He's a firefighter. He also works for his older brother. He also works for Amazon, and he also does moving. Yep, moving.
He's industrious. Yep.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he is. Well, he's the one with three children, the young children. The one who has a daughter that goes to private school.
Yeah, that'll make
Two
you work several jobs just for that tuition. That tuition.
babies in daycare, and his wife doesn't work. So,
Oh, okay. That
what can
explains it. That explains it. Did you have any family members? Now you're an only child, right?
Yes.
Did you have any family members who served in the military that you're aware of?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there was one that was with us in Dover, Mildred Lopes. My mother encouraged her to go into the military, and she actually did 20 years.
Now she's a cousin.
Yes, she's a cousin.
Okay. All right. So now I want to ask a little bit about influence. I'm wondering how your mom's experiences in the 6888 influence and shape your life and your decisions.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I consider myself rather independent, you know. I did not realize how independent I was until 2 years ago when my husband passed. And I was a complete basket case because I lived alone. I mean, it was just him and I here. And then when he passed, I had to live alone. I hadn't done that before. And it was woo, quite an experience. But I survived. I'm still here. So I think my mother's influence in telling me, depend on one person and that one person only, be
Yeah,
you.
yeah.
So I think that was a major impact on me. Yeah.
Now, how old was your mom when she passed?
71.
And what year was that?
1987.
Okay, she's been gone for a while.
Or was she 70? She was 70, not 71. Nine, yeah, she has been.
So I think what that would have been, she died in the
No, I'm
30s.
sorry. It was 88. She was 71. It was 1988.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a significant honor for her to receive a Congressional Medal. In fact, that's how we met recently when I was telling you about
Yes, thank you. Thank
the
you very much.
Congressional Gold Medal. What was the reaction? What was your reaction to that, and the reaction from your family?
They were all like, oh, wow. Remarkable, you know. I recently posted it on Facebook, and I've had quite a few people say, you know, how impressive that is. Like again, like I said, everybody that knew my mother loved her. She was such a sweet person, soft spoken, not like me, but but yeah, everybody was like real impressed, very impressed, and quite a few people were like, they're sorry it took so long for her recognition to come through. I have one particular very close friend who is a white man, and he even said, you know, it's a shame that those ladies, the 6888, they served their country. They did an excellent job because they loved their country, but the country didn't love them.
Yeah, that's always an interesting thing. Despite the level of racism that existed at the time in the United States, I found in talking to other descendants that the mothers and aunts, but grandmothers were who served in the 6888 were extremely loyal, extremely committed. They felt that they had a duty to help the country during the time of war, even though the country was not good to them.
Right,
So.
exactly.
And many of them felt that they actually were treated better in Europe than they were in the United States.
Yeah, my mother always said she wanted to go back to Europe, but
Yep.
she never got back. Yeah, she
Yep.
always said, I want to go back there and visit, you know, but she did all her traveling in the States and in the Caribbean. She
Yes.
didn't go abroad.
Okay. Let's see, that was before you had your travel dates in the travel business.
Right,
If
exactly.
she'd been in the travel business, then she would have gotten back, probably, certainly gotten back to Europe.
Yes,
So,
she would have. She certainly would have. I've been to Europe several times, so she would have been with me on one of those trips.
do you want to have any reflections to share on what your mother's life and legacy mean to you and your family?
My mother was my, even though she always told me to be independent, I was very dependent on her. She was not only my mother, my best friend, she was everything. You know, I would, when I first started working at the post office, I used to work from 5 to 1:30. I would come home 2 o'clock in the morning. The first thing I would do was call her. 2 o'clock in the morning. Hi, babe. How are you? How was your night? You know, she meant the world to me. You know, she did. She really meant the world to me. And I miss her. And it's ironic because I just recently had a relative who passed, and they asked me to speak at his funeral. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, I know exactly what I'm going to say. The day that I found out he passed, and I don't know to what extent happens. None of us know what happens when a person passes, except we know they die. But their spirit lingers. I know that for a fact because I have had my mother come to me in spirit several times with a warning. She told me things. I dreamt. I actually dreamt about her, and each dream I had came true. Each dream. And just recently, like I said, my cousin passed, and we were very close, and he came to me in spirit. So, you know, it's funny, but that's life. You know, we live and then we die, but the spirit lives on. I know that for a fact. The spirit, for those that are very close to you, they still linger on. And that's how I feel living in this house, that, you know, my mother's spirit is still here. It's still
Right.
here. So,
It was, yeah, that was certainly, I know if we still lived in the, if we lived in the home where we grew up, both the parent spirits would be there. So, yeah. Whether we like it or not, they'd both be there. So, we always used to say when we were selling the house down south after the last of the parents passed, my dad died first and then my mother died 10 years later. And my dad, he never wanted to sell the house. He said that he built this house. And so we were saying, oh Lord, we have to be careful about who we sell this house to, because if we sell it to the wrong person, they're going to be, their spirits will be coming back to us. And we knew that was the case. Fortunately, we ended up selling it to somebody who had an actual family connection and
Okay.
they didn't know about it and we didn't know about it. So I think it was a nice transition and we could, the spirits are at rest. That's important. It's important.
Right. It is important because I'm going to tell you, for a while I had a boarder that lived here. And he told me, he said, "You know, your house has spirits in it." I'm like, "Okay." And I just laughed it off, but I knew it was probably my mother and father.
Right.
Even as much as my mother was the liberal person and got along very well with everybody, not my father. Not my father. He was very, very racial, very. But then he had every reason to. He also was in World War II. And I remember him telling me stories about when he was on the front line, he didn't know whether the gunfire was coming from the front or coming from
Coming
the back.
from behind, yep.
So, but yeah, I had to laugh when the man told me that. That he said, "You know, your house has spirits." And I just said, "Oh,
The spirits come, it's time for me to leave. Nope, I'm out.
he just told me he heard people talking, and I'm like, "You did?" I never heard nobody talking in this house.
I don't know, when that boarder left, those spirits might have gone with him too. So there might have been somebody else talking to him. Also, I just have just a couple of things before we wrap up tonight. What do you think about your mother's decision to serve a country given the level of racism in America at the time?
I guess I would I have done it? I don't know. I don't know. I think she's a better person than me because I am the type of person, if you don't want me around, I'm not going to be around.
Right.
So, I mean, I know she loved the country, even though she joined the army under different circumstances. She didn't know she was actually joining. But I'm not surprised.
You said she didn't know she was joining.
Well, when she took the test, the exam, she didn't know the exam was for the for actually joining the army.
Okay.
But yeah.
Do you think she'd make the same choice now to serve a country based on what she's told you? She didn't regret that experience. She
No, she didn't regret it, not at all. She probably would. She would probably do it again.
right. So finally, what lessons from her life story can you share to inspire young African Americans to embrace fear as opportunity so they can shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves? So often young people are kind of reticent to do things, and so we always like to end with a note of inspiration to get them to go.
I always say this, it's like when I worked for the Postal Service, I used to instruct new hirees. I was an instructor, and I used to tell them, learn all you can, learn every job you can possibly learn, do it all. In a lot of cases, it worked for them because they got better jobs than some of their senior employees did. So even today, I would say, you know, in spite of whatever tensions there might be in the world, do all you can to improve yourself. Get all the education you can. And I do regret not having completed my college degree. I do regret that.
It's never too late.
I know it is too late for me now.
It's never too late. So you see pictures all the time of 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, 85-year-olds finishing their college degree. So
And I probably would be one of those 85-year-olds.
right.
Spartan ass.
No, you know, it's something to think about. You know, because a lot of the colleges now take into account your life experiences.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and for sharing your family story. I'm very grateful that you took the time out to be with me.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote from Amanda Gorman. There's always light, if we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it. See you for our next show on Wednesday, June 21st at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for Podcasters.